Above all, my brothers and sisters, do not swear, not by heaven or by earth or by anything else. All you need to say is a simple yes or no, otherwise you will be condemned. Well, that's a very short reading to base a whole sermon on, isn't it? And this is part of our series looking at the book of James with his practical teaching about living out our faith, and particularly the theme of the power of our words. And usually at this stage in a sermon, the convention is you give a funny anecdote from your own life. So as my title is Telling the Truth, at this point I'd have to tell you about some of the hilarious lies I told when I was young. The strange thing is, I'm actually quite weird, and I really can't lie. And I don't even say that particularly proudly, because it's not always a good thing at all, as anyone else who also is compulsively honest will know. When I look back on my life and I was trying to find a story that I could share, I can't really think of any fibs that I said that got me into hilarious trouble. All I can think of is the things that make me cringe as a teenager when I told the truth and hurt people. And none of them make good, funny stories, so I'm not going to share them, but I have learned a lot from them. And if you do ever want the brutal, unfiltered truth about anything, you know who to come to. I think I've learned a little more. Unfortunately, also, I have a rule in our family, which is from my own experience as a church leader's daughter, that Keith can't use embarrassing stories from the family to illustrate sermons, which is just as well for Bo, breathing a sigh of relief, because otherwise he'd be worried about some of the stories I might tell, like the one when he claimed that he'd done face paint printing at nursery, not hand printing, and many other school activities that were possibly implausible. But actually, this very short passage that we're looking at today is talking less about whether you lie, but about how you tell the truth. How do you make sure that people know that you mean what you say? When James writes, "Do not swear," he's not talking about not using naughty words or misusing God's name when you're angry, though you also shouldn't do those things. James is just almost directly quoting Jesus' own words from the Sermon on the Mount, which we also heard. "But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, for it's God's throne, by the earth, for it is his footstool, by Jerusalem, for it's the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. All you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one." Now, oaths were quite significant in the Old Testament times. And even later, when Jesus was on trial in front of the Sanhedrin, he obeyed the law that said you have to answer when questioned on oath under the name of God. In James's time, when he wrote this, you could prove how trustworthy your words were by backing them up by swearing to something. And how seriously the oath should be taken depended on what you swore on. For example, if I said, "I swear on this biro from a multi-pack of 5 for £2 that I didn't eat the last chocolate in the box," you would be less likely to believe me than if I said, "I swear on Keith's life that I didn't eat the last chocolate from the box." And we still do this now, possibly a bit more lightheartedly. So just for a minute, with the people beside you, talk about things you've said or people you've heard say that they swear on, or to prove that they're telling the truth. Things that you might have said at school. Just have a moment just to compare notes. Okay, finish up. You can carry on confessing later to each other. I won't ask anyone to repeat them because some of them are quite horrific. I was thinking about what we used to say when I was at school, cross my heart and hope to die, stick a needle in my eye, which is pretty gross. Eliza said they have a much nicer version these days, which isn't quite so violent, which is good. But Jesus and James are both telling us that we don't need to do this. As Christians, we should simply be able to say yes or no, and that would be all the assurance that anybody should need. It's not often that I prefer the King James version of the Bible, because I really like God's word to be clear and understandable. But I have to admit, on this occasion, it does sound really good. "Let your yea be yea and your nay, nay." Though I think everyone Eliza's kind of age is currently singing, "Watch me whip, watch me nay, nay," that bit. That's all very well. But how do we make people believe our yes or our no? How do we get to that point where our word is all the oath we need? And we don't have to insist, we don't have to promise, we don't have to swear to make people believe us. In some ways, this is one of the points where the whole bigger theme of James comes to a point. If you haven't read James yet, even though we've been studying it, if you haven't just read the whole book, then I really recommend you just do it tonight. It's only 5 chapters long. It's just so packed full of real practical advice. I think each time I read it, something new hits me. And it's really easy reading. So go and do that if you don't listen to anything else I say. But the main thread that I see going through the book of James is that faith that isn't lived out through the way you live is meaningless. Words are nothing if your actions don't match up. And when we speak, we won't be believed because of the strength of the words we use to swear by, but because of the honesty that people have received from us in the past. And if we haven't been true to our word before, even swearing on all manner of things is not going to convince people that this time we mean it. A few years ago, I started making friends with someone who had toddlers the same age as my kids, and I felt like we were going to be really good friends and we were getting on really well. But then I was at her house one day, and she had a phone call, which I overheard, talking to another friend, and she was saying all sorts of things that just weren't true about the reason she couldn't do something with her. And then she got off the phone and told me things about this person that I knew just weren't true. And immediately all that potential friendship is just gone, because I thought back on the conversations that we'd had and I doubted them because the trust had gone. And of course, I couldn't trust her words going forwards either. And I'm sure most of you know the story of the boy who cried wolf and the effect that had on people believing him. And if you're a parent and you've never used that against your child, then you're really missing a trick. What these stories and these anecdotes and James's teachings are about is having integrity, a moral standard that goes through everything that you do and all your interactions with people, so that your deeds match your words. So much of the book of James is dealing with problems and challenges of Christian life with wisdom. Deep wisdom. It's not about knowledge, but it's about skills in living well. Now, at this point, those of us that don't feel wise, who may feel like they've been the boy who cried wolf in the past, so have no honest reputation to build any trust on, those of us that don't feel that we had much integrity in the decisions we've made lately, those of us that are all too aware of the times we haven't acted as kindly as our words have spoken, are probably feeling a bit condemned. How can your word be trusted if you have a natural tendency to low-level fibs? How can you show those around you an example of Christian integrity if you haven't had much in the past? Recently at 2020, which is the Sunday night group for young adults that I lead along with others, recently we had a session where the leaders answered questions about their jobs and how their faith played into what they do, with a nurse, soldier, lawyer and army counsellor on the panel. It was a really, really interesting evening, and I feel like all of you missed out for not being there. But one thing that came out of it was I heard Paul Riley speak about how, as a young man in the army, he obeyed the noble moral values and standards that were required of him, but he didn't necessarily stick with them when off duty. When he became a Christian, these values suddenly had a reason for being, and they became something that were more naturally a part of who he was in his relationship with God. And they changed from something he put on with his uniform to being something that came from within and were expressed through his whole life, with obviously blips, I'm sure. And this is how it is for us developing integrity in our lives. It's not about a human effort of just trying to be good, though effort is always involved in trying to live right. But we have a God who can work in us to transform us, to help us shift habits that we thought were unescapable failings in our personality, and to give us wisdom in our decisions and our conversations. Even says right at the beginning of James in chapter 1, "If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you." So that's in chapter 1. If any of you lacks wisdom, which is probably most of us. You should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. According to traditional tales, James had the nickname Old Camel Knees because of the calluses built up in his knees from spending so much time praying. I used to also have similarly knobbly knees, but that was more from too much time building train tracks on wooden floors when the children were little. I wish it was for praying. I'd like to say that. Back to James. So I find that really telling because I really like James. And what I like about him is that he seems to be someone who's talking all about how we live, a practical action, sort of day-to-day type of a man who understands how real people act. And he spent hours and hours praying. And from this prayer came the wisdom that he shares through his letter to it that we now use. Let your yea be yea and your nay, nay. Your yes mean yes and your no mean no. So let's ask God to give us wisdom in the things we say to people, to guide our decisions, big and small. Let's spend time in our daily lives praying and giving the situations we face that day to God, asking him to guide our tongues. Let's allow God to transform us into someone known to others as true to their word. And let's do what we talk about doing and let our faith show through our deeds.